How would you like to attend a conference and hear Rod Rosenblatt, Will Wheaton, Chris Roseborough, Al Schmidt, Suzanne Venker, and Todd Wilkin? You're invited to the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois. Registration is $100 per person. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois. issuesetc.org.
A friend recently said that I've had a distinguished career. And I cannot have control over the accomplishments in terms of how people view them. But I know that I have done my very best to provide the very best of responsive care to my patients.
That's Kermit Gosnell, an abortion clinic doctor you might not have heard of. He's not being written or talked about much in the media. He's an abortion clinic doctor. He's in Philadelphia. He's on trial for 8 counts of murder, one of an adult female who died during an abortion, and for an alleged slaughter of 7 late-term babies born alive. Now, I usually don't give much credence when you see something on Facebook. Here's a story that the mainstream media won't tell you about, and then they link to CBS or NBC or Fox News. Well, this is one of those stories that genuinely is not really being covered very much, and it really ought to be covered. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway will join us for the first few minutes to talk about this, well, a story that's not being covered. Dr. Alvin Schmidt joins us after that, part 3 of our 4-part series on the parallels between Joseph Smith and Muhammad. Today we're going to talk about their moral fiber, their character, their moral lives, and how they are parallel. Dr. Craig Evans will bring us up to date on the Gospel of Judas, the so-called Gospel of Judas. And then in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., our Pastor's Roundtable with Pastor Ben Ball, Pastor Larry Beam will be looking at John Chapter 10, the Good Shepherd chapter. And I invite your questions and your comments for the next 2 hours. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-6943. Send us an email here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or in the second hour of the program, you can leave questions or comments on the Good Shepherd chapter of John for our Pastor's Roundtable, facebook.com/issuesetc. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a regular guest, a reporter in Washington, D.C., and a contributor to GetReligion.org. Molly, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you for having me back here.
You have been keeping track, to the best of your ability, counting as of today. How many major media outlets have covered this story of the Kermit Gosnell mass murder trial?
Well, it really depends. I mean, there has been some local news coverage of this story, but when you're talking about the big three nightly news programs, they've yet to mention it. The trial has been going on with absolutely horrific updates on an almost daily basis, and the nightly news has yet to mention it. The New York Times mentioned it once, buried in the paper, I think either the day before the trial started or the first day of the trial. They mentioned it, and then they have been silent ever since. And the Washington Post has, I think, maybe run an AP story, but they've done no original reporting, even though it's a fairly close to home story there with tremendous policy implications. And so it just kind of depends. It's just a very curious thing, whereas other stories that are local stories, say the Sandy Hook massacre or the LAPD cop that recently went on a rampage or the Colorado shooting, when they're local crime stories like that, they definitely get quite a bit of national media coverage. And here you have a mass murder trial that could not be more fascinating. I mean, we're talking about beheading infants. The man's on trial for 8 murders, but by all accounts, that was just the people that they came upon right there at the end. So there are hundreds of babies that were born this way that were told he killed this way. He kept trophies of his victims. I mean, he kept their heads and feet in jars. And I mean, it's just absolutely riveting testimony. It's normally the type of thing that you would see nonstop coverage on all the cable networks, all the papers. But in this case, it hasn't been. I think it's worth asking why.
Well, venture a guess. Answer your own question. Why do you think?
Well, I really do like to just have reporters explain why they aren't covering something. And And they're not doing a very good job with the answers. I think everybody assumes the reason why is because they are so deeply committed to abortion on demand that they don't want to risk anything that would hurt that sacred belief that they hold. They don't want to have any bad coverage. There are obviously tremendous policy implications for this abortion clinic and the abortion regime in Pennsylvania that permitted this. So if you don't cover it, then you don't have to answer tough questions. But I also think there might be an element of racism involved here. All of the victims were Black, and I wonder if the victims were white, like they were in Sandy Hook. Most of the victims were white, I think, if we'd be seeing different coverage. I think that it doesn't fit into any of the narratives that we like to have for stories like this. The standard narrative is that if you're pro-life, you're misogynistic and you treat women poorly, and if you're a Planned Parenthood or someone who is running an abortion clinic, then we're supposed to believe that you are very pro-female, and that's the way the narrative always goes. This turns that narrative, you know, upside down quite a bit, and I think it might be hard for reporters to figure out how to keep that narrative going if they have stories like this. I think it's kind of complicated, but the Washington Post has a health policy reporter, and I just noticed I hadn't seen any policy stories on this, even though there are quite a few policy angles. We have all sorts of states that have changed the regulations of abortion clinics or are trying to in response to this and other stories about horrific conditions. There are all sorts of licensing and regulation questions, and she hasn't done any stories on it, literally zero stories. And so I just thought, well, I wonder, did she cover kind of tangentially policy-related stories, like when Todd Akin, the Senate candidate from Missouri, said something about rape? Did she cover that? Well, if you plug in Akin and her last name into the Washington Post, I can't remember if it was like 34 or 37 items pop up. Did she cover when someone said something mean to a woman who's a birth control activist, Sandra Fluke? Well, if you type in Fluke and her last name, you get 11 stories. And one of those is one of the puffiest profiles I've ever seen on Sandra Fluke. Did she cover the Komen Foundation, which isn't a policy issue, but when the Komen Foundation tried to stop giving money to Planned Parenthood, the media bullied them horrifically into backing down on that. Did Sarah Cliff cover that? Well, yes, dozens of times, 3 dozen times, I believe, were how many stories she covered on that. So she could see the policy implications of a private foundation deciding not to give money to the country's largest abortion provider, which isn't really a policy issue so much as a private donor issue. She could get 3 dozen stories out of that. But she says she didn't cover Gosnell because it's not there are no policy implications and that it's just a local crime story.
Is it possible, those are the two possibilities that you've laid out there, both of them kind of involve the reporter struggling either with their own biases or struggling with what do I do with this story because it doesn't fit my worldview and the framework that is commonly employed for stories like this. Is it possible there's a more chilling alternative? And you got to answer this as a journalist, because I don't think like a journalist, that they might not consider, the journalists who don't cover this, may not just, this isn't news. Babies dying however they die in an abortion clinic is not newsworthy.
Well, I think that's one of the challenging issues about this story. I mean, this man is on trial for babies that were born alive. They were, by, you know, legally speaking, we're not dealing with the fuzzy issue of, you know, whether it's okay to kill a baby at the same age inside the womb or outside the womb. These babies were outside the womb. And yet I noticed that when the AP covers it, they sometimes refer to this as like unorthodox abortions. These aren't abortions, but it might give us a hint that they are struggling with this, that they don't think it's news because they think this is kind of what happens in abortion clinics all the time, and that these babies just had the bad fortune to be on the wrong side of the womb when their killing took place, and that it doesn't really matter. I don't know. I mean, these are challenging issues, but reporters should not be limited by their own personal biases here, or they should work to overcome them. I don't know. I mean, it's just such a horrific story, and the media blackout on this is so, you know, it's a really sad thing. And I do think that in a way, the media, by failing to give this coverage, and not just coverage, but as Kirsten Powers wrote in USA Today, this deserves front page coverage. Not buried, not one story every 3 months, but front page, daily, regular coverage, asking tough questions. When the media don't give this story what it deserves? Are they not sort of being accomplices to these types of crimes? And that's those are very serious charges I'm making. But I do think that as a profession, we need to always shine a light on the defenseless, whether we're talking about poor immigrants who are going to a horrifically disgusting clinic to take care of what they perceive as a problem that they can't handle otherwise and end up dead, or whether it's these children who were born alive and were beheaded, who screamed as nurses clipped their spinal cords. This is still reporters' duty to cover this.
With only 30 seconds here, Molly, it only takes one big-name reporter, one major outlet reporter, to write a story on this and the dam breaks, right?
I think so, and I actually think today has been kind of a tipping point on this, in that Kirsten Powers wrote something for USA Today where she is basically forcing people to take responsibility. Right now, as we're on the phone, there's something going on in Congress where different members are trying to highlight what's going on here to force media attention. I would not be surprised to see a big story come out of this, just because I don't think all reporters are as in bed with Planned Parenthood as some reporters are. And so I think we will see something, we will start to see more accountability here. We will start to see more coverage. And this trial is going to go on for weeks. And so with every day that they don't cover it, I think people are fed up and they are naming names, and they want answers from these reporters. Why are you covering this up? You know, our job as reporters is to cover the news, not cover it up. But this has mostly been a cover-up, and I think people are sick and tired of it.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a reporter in Washington, D.C., and a contributor to GetReligion.org. Molly, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to continue our four-part series, part three, when we come back with Dr. Alvin Schmidt, on the remarkable parallels between Joseph Smith, the founder of Mormonism, and Muhammad, the founder of Islam. We'll talk about their moral fiber, if you will. Stay tuned.
We, the saints at St. Athanasius Lutheran Church, wish all lovers of the unshackled art of music unceasing grace from God our Father and our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Since the beginning, the Church has spoken by her sacred hymns. Now is your chance to contribute to the great voice of the communion of saints throughout history with the St. Ambrose Hymn Writing Contest. Render your contribution to this great corpus of song. For more information, visit clamavi.com. That's C-L-A-M-A-V-I.com.
My peace. A Pentecost sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
It will look like suffering, like death, like the worst thing that could ever happen. But Jesus assures them, "It is my peace, and I give it to you."
And for any size donation during the Easter season, we'll send you a CD of this sermon and a sermon preached by Todd on the first Pentecost. You can make a special Easter gift today at issuesetc.org. Thanks for keeping us in mind during the 50 days of Easter.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, etc.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. So visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastor to hold a seminar in your area. Just go to theclcc.org.
Hi, this is Jonathan Cullen from France.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
First, I would like to say thank you very much for your program. It very much ministers to those of us who are outside the comforts and the luxuries of having a confessional Lutheran congregation nearby. Thank you very much for this great resource.
Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. IssuesETC.org.